And during that time, he's worked on KBOO News, on TuneIn, Turn On and Remember, on Out Loud, and on Between the Covers, and more, I think. Probably, Dan, some other things.
I think that pretty well covers it.
He has a background in radio. He retired in 2006 to pursue his passion for writing. His first book, Lester Briggs Died Today, was a collection of prose and poetry, and his latest book is also a collection of prose and poetry. It's called The Air in Me, and we'll be talking about that book today. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into your new book, The Air in Me, I'd like to talk about you a little bit and about your background. You worked in radio before you retired to concentrate on writing. Tell us a little bit about your work in radio, where it was and how it worked.
A lot of my work in radio was right here in the Pacific Northwest, mostly small market radio. And in small market radio, you wear many different hats. And I did about the only thing I didn't do in radio was engineering. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the owners of the radio station that I work for would appreciate that.
So you were more of an announcer.
I was actually hired in most of the radio stations as a sales manager and handled a lot of the advertising, selling advertising, doing the schmoozing and all the rest of that stuff. And at the same time, I was often asked to fill in for time slots and do some on-air work. And so, you know, and wrote a lot of ad copy, which I thought was fun, but, you know. Doing many different things, and it made it very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to KBOO?
I took the bus. actually, a friend of mine at the apartment complex that I live in said, "You need a haircut." And this was back when the oil spillage down in Louisiana was going on, and Janka was giving free haircuts, and the hair was going to be sent down to, you know,
as part of a way of remediating the oil spill in the Gulf.
Exactly. So I thought it was a win-win situation. I get a free haircut, and they get some of my dandruff-free hair. and so I came in, and it just, man, it struck me from the first moments that I was in the building that this is a cool place. And it's something that just kind of like reignited within me that said, I want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And so I went through the indoctrination.
The volunteer orientation.
Yeah.
Okay.
That too. And then I just started getting involved in the news department and all of the other areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how about Oregon? Have you always lived in Oregon?
No. Californian by birth. Mm-hmm. Lived in the Chicago area for nearly 20 years. In 1988, I left the Chicago area and came to Oregon. I thought I was actually going to settle in Seattle. I had been talking to somebody about going into partnership with them in a business, and when I got out here, found out that he wasn't the person I wanted to go into business with, and I wasn't overly impressed with Seattle, and landed in Portland, and I love Portland. It's a great city.
So when did you start writing?
I've been writing for a number of years. I would say that I wrote for enjoyment probably for the first 15, 20 years of my life. You know, from the time I learned to hold a crayon or a pencil or a pen or whatever. But I was always making things up in my head, little stories and things like that. And then in 1988, when I moved out here, I started writing more seriously and sent a few things out, got the typical rejection letters and, you know, still kept writing. So I figured, well, there might be something to this, you know. And so I over that period of time, I became more seriously passionate about my writing and didn't think until about 2004, 2005 that, you know, maybe I could write a book. And I'd met a couple of writers and we became friends and they started telling me about how difficult it is to get published and all of the rest of that stuff, as we all know. And that didn't deter me because the first book I published was print on demand. And so,
and that was called Lester Briggs Died Today.
It is, yeah. And so this period of time between the first book and the second book was a time for me to really try to refine my writing to something that would be more tangible, believable, something that would have some creative spark to it. So.
And do you have a situation where you get feedback from people on your writing? How does that work for you?
The only feedback I've had from people is I also post a lot of my writing on a website, authorsden.com, and they review the writing, and so you get stuff back from them. But it's never critical kind of review. It's loved it or hated it, you know. And so, but I've never had anyone critically sit down and say, hey, you could be a better writer if you did this or this or this, or, you know, I don't know why you haven't published before, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think that I've ever run across anyone yet that has actually sat down and given me that tutorial of this is how you could become a better writer. I'm always open to it.
Mm-hmm. Good. So also, did the writing ever cross paths with your radio work?
The only way it crossed paths was in radio, when you're writing ad copy, it has to be short and succinct. It has to send a message immediately. And so that discipline helped me in writing a lot of the shorter stuff that I write. In writing some of the prose, a few of the longer pieces, it helped me define the characters much earlier than it would be in a longer, more drawn-out piece. So they overlapped a little bit, but they... very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And your work on the KBOO News writing, did that cross over into your creative work at all?
Actually, in my time before retirement, I'd never gotten involved in the news. So I'd never done any news writing. That aspect of writing was a whole new experience. And thanks to Jenka and, you know, a lot of other folks along the way, it became easier for me to start writing some of the news stuff. But there's a lot of difference between sitting down and writing a piece of prose or poetry than it is writing a sharp news piece, as you well know.
Mm-hmm. Sort of. Okay. So talk a little bit about the title of your collection, The Air in Me.
Wow. The Air in Me is actually, I had two other titles in mind. The first title was going to be The Accidental Buddhist. But there was a problem with that. Somebody in, I believe it was North Carolina, just a few years prior to me publishing this book, published a book called The Accidental Buddhist. I didn't want my book to conflict with his book and potentially lose book sales. So I went back to the drawing board and I started thinking about what this book was. It was the breathing in and breathing out of everyday life experiences in the characters that I created and in the stories that I developed, in the poetry that was written. So I decided that it would be quite clever to title the book The Chi in Me, Chi being QI. And my publisher, Suzanne Deacon, said, that's kind of clever, but, you know, our whole intent is to sell books. And prose and poetry aren't the really top-selling books on the bookshelf. And so she said, rethink it. And so I just got to the point where I didn't want to change the concept of the everyday breathing in and breathing out of life, but I had to come up with a different term. And that's when I came up with the air in me. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it is, and I'm sticking to it.
Good. So in the introduction, you talk about how originally you wanted to separate what you say is the gay prose and poetry from the straight prose and poetry in the book. What's the difference between them? I'm not sure I'd be able to tell.
Well, one, I didn't want there to be any. I like a nice, fluid life. I like people to see me and those who I surround myself with as simply just people. And then if I tried to pull out a piece that was written with a gay theme and separate it and put it in a different box, I didn't think that would be reasonable. I thought it would go contradictory to my whole point of wanting things to be fluid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I just felt that an explanation was due, and because by now most of the world, I think except for some people that live in Latvia, know that I'm gay, you know. But it's not that big a deal on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
So
you gave up that idea that somehow you'd separate them.
Yeah. I just decided that idea would go contrary to everything I think and believe.
Mm-hmm. And you do have a prose section and a poetry section. And sometimes when I was reading the book, I thought, well, is that prose or is that poetry? You know, they aren't all that. I mean, that's all a bit of fluidity also.
Right.
I wasn't. You know, talk about that, how you decided what goes where.
Some of it has to do with the fact that after I'd looked at this manuscript 1,000 times, it seemed, and I was getting ready to send it to the publisher, there were things there that I thought kind of fit both elements and decided that I'm just going to put it here. And
flip a coin, so to speak.
Yeah. There's really no rhyme or reason. I didn't have any magical marketing concept in mind, but that's, you know.
It just felt kind of like,
it just felt like that's where that should be.
Okay. Maybe we could hear some now. Could you read the prose piece titled Invisible? And anything you want to tell us about that before or
sure.
after you read it?
I like this one.
Yeah.
This is a story. I watch a lot of movies. If you ever hear me and Will and Sam talking about movies.
You're talking about some people here at KVU, just to let people know.
Exactly. And we're always talking about, well, I was watching a British movie once, and it was a fascinating movie about a man that thought he was becoming invisible because nobody remembered his worth in life. So I kind of rewrote that concept, and it's called Invisible. "Do you see me?" the old man asked. "Yes," I said. The old man sipped from his coffee cup. wanting to savor the last taste of dark roast before facing the rainstorm. He spoke loudly since he was at the other end of the counter. Well, actually, just two stools away. I had a good job, drove a limousine, a shiny new Lincoln every year for 41 years, still working each drop of coffee as if it was gold. He looked up, smiled through his wrinkled face, and said, I paid taxes, always paid my bills, even paid alimony, never late. But you know what? Now people walk past me as if I don't exist. I motioned to the waitress for more coffee. Then I noticed she had to walk past the old man to get to me. She acted as if he was not even there. I asked if she would fill his cup one more time. She glanced at her left and said, Oh, him. I forgot he was still here. Just before we left, the old man said, You see, when you reach a certain age, you slowly begin drifting out of sight. No matter what value you provided in your youth, it doesn't count for much. You just wait. One day, just like me, you'll become invisible. The old man stood now, bent from arthritis, bundled himself for the waiting rain, but just before he opened the door to leave, he said to the waitress, See you tomorrow. Without looking up, she waved him off by saying, Bye, Dad. See you later. I was once a man, seen, heard, valued, respected, but now I am a ghost.
And it's interesting. It sounds like you took something that wasn't in the first person, something that you saw, and you put it into the first person, which is very interesting to me.
It just seemed to work.
Yeah. Could you, let's maybe hear another piece. There's a piece called One Night in Clovis. I'd like to hear that.
What page is that?
That's on page 13.
This is something that way back in the early 60s, a friend and I drove from Los Angeles, California to Lincoln, Illinois in an old beat-up Volkswagen that did not have a gas gauge. And we were cutting cross-country. We'd gone to Albuquerque, and he was heading towards Clovis, which the ultimate destination for us at that leg of the trip was to go to Muleshoe, Texas. Well, Clovis and Muleshoe aren't that far apart. However, there is a stretch of road that from Clovis to Muleshoe that is just was at the time a dirt road. And it got kind of scary as to whether we were going to make it to Muleshoe. But Clovis at the time was a small town, and I draw a lot of my inspiration from music because I thought this had some sort of a musical tone to it. And so this is called One Night in Clovis. We met one day, long time ago, in a cantina near Clovis, New Mexico. The jukebox sadly played Patsy Cline's I Go Out Walking After Midnight. You were young and strong, a cowboy, so you said. I was on my way to Amarillo, but ended up in your bed. And there you wrapped me in your arms. We loved each other all night long. When I awoke, you were gone. The note said mending fences. Sadly, though, I could not move on, hard as I tried, so I went searching. I walked through raging storms, no light except for a thin slice of a lonely moon, while I heard Patsy singing, I go out walking after midnight, playing in my head, crossed the rushing creek, up snow-filled hills, down through the greening meadow, over rough and rumbling sagebrush, scorched by the burning noonday sun, ascending high rocks, barely holding on, pressing on through slamming winds, proving only that I am driven by the lovely reminder of your strong, sweet, and delicious body. This image is forever etched in the deepest parts of my heart and soul, and I wish I could do it all again, because I'm still waiting in that little cantina just east of Clovis, New Mexico.
You're listening to Dan Johnson reading from his book, The Air in Me. This is Between the Covers. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. And Dan, you mentioned the musical inspiration that you draw from. And that was interesting to me. There's another piece in the book that has several musical references in it. And that's Because of You. That's on page 45. I was wondering if you could read that. It references several of my favorite artists in that piece, actually, which is why I was very attracted to it.
I really like this piece. Mm-hmm. And it, again, I'm hearing the music that you can just draw from, and you know, I still wanted to keep a little bit of a storyline in it, too. So this is called Because of You. It was because of you that the preacher said, Son, loving another man is a sinful thing. Then my sweet professor buried his head, saying, What a mess. Man, I wish I was dead. And Mama cried when she heard it was because of you and Lucinda Williams whispering in my head. I can't say what you were whispering. But it was because of you that I became sad and lonely as a Robert Cray blues song deep down in my bones. It is hard to follow or even comprehend how my life could have bent like a newly planted willow not yet trained to weep. Because of you, I was left in the pouring rain, enduring endlessly through the pain, never breaking, constantly twisting and turning, like an uninvited summer wind blowing and burning. Because of you and Lucinda and the pain of ungodly sin, I can still hear Duane Eddy slice through a sweet refrain, and because of you, I would do it all over again. I will say that I've had some people who read that asking me who Duane Eddy was.
Oh. Are they younger people?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, that twang, I could understand how you could, you know, have that in your sort of in your head and relate it to your experiences. The yeah. twang of his guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a number of pieces in the book that were drawn from experiences while listening to music, and this was one of them. I've got a couple of Lucinda's albums, and another one that I really get a lot of inspiration from is Leonard Cohen. Mm-hmm. And so even though I can't read a stitch of music, music is there and it's planted. So,
And you know, that piece is about love and maybe lost love. Did you have that in mind as a theme, or did it just happen that you wrote the poems and the prose pieces, and that emerged.
That's exactly the way it happened. Mm-hmm. I just sat down, and sometimes with a headset on, I'm listening to the music, and I start writing, and I just let the music and my hand and the words kind of fall in place, and with no other real theme in mind.
Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with how... Do you even think about this, the issue of autobiography or not in your work? How do you, when people say, oh, is that based on real experience? How do you handle that?
I will tell people that there is probably only one piece in here that is a more accurate picture of my life growing up. And that's the piece called Boy Lost. The rest is based primarily on creativity, imagination, coming up with something that is going to be a good prose or a poetry, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that Boy Lost, that's kind of a harsh... That's a harsh reality there.
It's a pretty brutal picture, and it took me a while to write that. I could not write that early on in my life. I think I had to go out and experience some more of life before I could sit down and write it with some sense of clarity.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, we probably need to wrap up, and I wanted maybe... for you to read one of your very short pieces to close us out, because you have pieces in the... We've mostly concentrated on some of the longer pieces. So how about a short piece of your choosing?
I have one. I read it the other day at a reading, and it actually took me longer to go through the explanation than to read it.
Okay.
But very quickly, what it is I get a lot of my... inspiration from writing TriMet and running across the sea of people that you come in contact with on a daily basis. And one day I was taking the bus across town, and there was this young woman sitting across from me. She was in goth. She had rings and tattoos, and she looked so desperately lonely. She just looked as if somebody needed to put an arm around her and tell her that whatever was going on would be okay. And she had, the thing that struck me, she had three little teardrop tattoos on each eye, just under each eye. And I thought, wow, there's something there. So this is called Young Woman Alone. A young woman sits alone, inked tears trail from swollen eyes, leaving a permanent stain.
Thank you for that, Dan. I want to thank you very much for sharing your stories and sharing your work with us. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
And I want to let people know again, this has been Between the Covers. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and my guest has been Dan Johnson. The title of his collection that we've been hearing from is The Air in Me. Thank you for listening.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/ Station Manager Hire 2013.
Good morning, and welcome to Black Book Talk. Happy New Year to everybody. This is the January edition. My name is Patricia Welch. I am the library lady.
And I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman.
And O.B. Hill, Mirror Image Books.
And our guest today is Dr. Amadou Fofana, who is the chair and associate professor of French at Willamette University. He is the author of The Films of Ousmane Sembène, Discourse, Politics, and Culture, and he has chosen a fascinating subject. Some of you are probably aware of him, especially if you've attended the Cascade Festival of Films, but if you're not, sit back, relax, and be prepared to learn about really an incredible artistic person. So good morning, Dr. Fofana, and welcome to Black Book Talk.
Thank you. Good morning, Patricia. How are you all?
We are fine.
Starting the year off well.
Well, let me just say this. Yesterday was a very important day. It was the 1st of January. And on that particular day, 90 years ago, the honored filmmaker and author that we're going to be talking about was born.
That's right.
I'd like to say, in terms of the book that you have written, a very, very academic, exercise in intellectualizing on international trade, and I really appreciate the work you put into that.
Thank you.